The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC.
It's said that a lack of trust is your biggest expense. Well, we're going to speak to the author of that comment in just a moment. The Peter McClelland Show starts now.
Live from the Twin Cities, it's the Peter McClelland Show. Peter McClelland, CHFC, is the president of the 401k Latte Company. Peter has helped his financial planning clients for more than 20 years with advice about their money, their families, and their life goals. Find out more online at 401klatte.com. Invest in a conversation now. Here's Peter McClelland.
And welcome to the Peter McClelland Show. This is your host, Peter McClelland. Thank you for listening. And we are privileged today to be speaking to Dave Versager, who has written a book recently called The Trust Edge. And it's what the subtitle is Transform Your Relationships, Revenue, and Results. And Dave, first of all, welcome to the Peter McClelland Show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you. I'm intrigued by this concept of trust. Tell me, first of all, what's the genesis of this? How did you start seeing such value in establishing trust in business? How did that come about?
Part of that came about, I was speaking on some, you know, certainly leadership topics, but it came out of my graduate research, getting my master's in organizational leadership. I just ended up doing all my research on trust and how it affects the bottom line of organizations. But really, it started with me kind of asking the question, what's unique about the top leaders, organizations, and brands of all time? And that's the question that really, I said, what is really unique? And people could say a lot of different things, engagement or leadership or all kinds of things, but I really felt like it's not, it's trust. Where we find that for the trusted brand, we'll pay more, we'll come back, we'll tell others. For the trusted leader, we'll buy, we'll vote for them, we'll follow them. For the trusted salesperson, we'll buy from them. And that's where it came out of, is this idea of, you know, when we started to look at the greatest leaders in organizations of all time, the only commonality, really strong commonalities, with that they were the most trusted. And we started to see, I think maybe one of the uniquenesses of my interest was how it really affects the bottom line, because people want to say, oh, trust is a soft skill, right? Oh, it's just a soft idea, isn't it? And my biggest maybe uniqueness is how I show how it really affects the bottom line, how in fact a lack of trust is your biggest expense, whether it's in your marriage, any other relationship, in your business, in your sales, in your leadership, or anything else.
I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but I would agree with that. I was thinking about this whole issue of trust yesterday, knowing we were going to have you on, and I'm just thinking it's exactly what's missing today on so many fronts. People have lost trust in a general sense in government. They've lost trust in Wall Street. There's a lack of trust on a number of levels.
Yep, absolutely.
And so how do we reestablish it, or how does the individual in the midst of a very skeptical time, people are scared, the economy's still pretty messed up. We're seeing some signs of recovery, but it's sufficient to say that it's still a very troubled economy. What does the business person do to establish trust? You have something called the eight pillars. You want to talk about that a little bit?
I sure can. I would say, first of all, people need to really understand the tie to the bottom line. At least you and I might say, well, just for character's sake or just because of who we are, we would live out these pillars. But I would also say when people see or companies see how really tied to the bottom line it is, they start to actually consider it. And you look at Tiger Woods, right?
Mm-hmm.
One breach of trust or 20 breaches of trust. And he lost $70 million in 3 weeks. The PGA said if he wouldn't have come back on the course this year, it might have cost them $2 billion because of 50% less viewers when he's not on the course. Well, a breach of trust costs money, and it's just like your credit score and my credit score. Hey, if we want a loan on our house, we're highly trusted, we pay less.
True.
We're not trusted very much, we pay a lot more. In fact, to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of a loan, if it's a $500,000 loan, over $300,000 more. In some cases, in just a $200,000 loan, you might pay an extra $115,000 over the course of the loan. So it really does affect the bottom line. So I point to that first, and I think maybe before I jump into the pillars, it's just worth just considering how some things are affected. For instance, in one of the kind of cool early diagrams in the book, just very simply, I mean, I prove this out in business stories like Southwest and this New York donut shop, Jason Kotke's research and some other things. But as trust goes up, as trust increases, every time output, morale, retention of good people, productivity, innovation, loyalty, and revenue go up. Mm. Every time trust decreases, costs, problems, skepticism, you talked about that, that's the opposite of trust.
It is.
Attrition, time to market, and stress. All
wow.
As those things go up, so do the cost, problems, and skepticism. So as trust increases, in fact, those things go down. And attrition, I mean, just take one of those things. It costs way more than you think. In just an average-sized company, you know, attrition costs $70,000 in one person turnover if it was a person that you wanted to keep, at least $70,000. So, some of these costs, I mean, you can think of it yourself. A supplier you trust, one call, done. A supplier you don't trust, oh, I don't know, 5 calls, 10 faxes,
true.
A bunch of stress later, you still don't get what you wanted. And in some of these interesting examples, the costs and the time costs, where there's lower trust, just an amazing difference. And you can think about that with someone you trust or don't trust. It takes way more time and stress and whatnot. But prove that out a little bit. But then I get into the 8 pillars that were unique. And I think... You know, it's kind of fascinating when you ask people, well, what do you think when you think of trust, you know? And so a lot of people might start by saying honesty or integrity or something like that, and those are very, very important pieces. But it's in the greatest brands, leaders, and organizations, really all 8 pillars are there. And it's very important. So, I mean, I can just touch on them if you'd like that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Why not? And I'd especially like, I know right now there's another fresh crop of college graduates that are out looking for work. And I think there needs to be an element of common sense given to them. And what I see in these 8 pillars is a ton of common sense. But I think we're living in a culture that craves it because it's missing. It's far and few between,
right.
You know.
That's exactly right. That's what people say, too. It's like, hey, I wrote this book, so it's not rocket science, you know? But and on the other hand, it's gotten, these rave reviews, I think, not because it's so unique or fresh. Maybe there's a little new angle on stuff on this topic. But the reason is, to a large degree, this is quite simple stuff, but people are not doing it.
No.
And people think they're doing it. It's just like ethics, right? If you talk about ethics, everybody thinks they have it or it's too late, you know? So, and that's the same with some of this stuff is people, it's so simple. It's like, oh, is that sophisticated enough? Is that a fresh enough, unique enough, hard to understand enough idea?
Well,
no.
But you're going against the grain. I mean, a lot of young people, and I'm not biased, I don't think, towards people that have tattoos and piercings. But let's face it, if you're looking to launch your career, you have to understand that you're making it harder for yourself. You're self-sabotaging if people look at you and wonder, gee, I'm not sure. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's an element of that there, and it's not to knock them. I just think that you're creating an obstacle for people to call attention on the negative side, possibly.
Absolutely. Well, we create one in every. And this is my next favorite quote is in my book is we increase or decrease trust with every single interaction.
Mm.
So every interaction I have with you, I don't care if you're wearing this or wearing that. If you say this, if you usually talk clean but you swear that time, if you usually do this, but that time you do something, every single interaction, we build or increase trust. You know, it's interesting. I don't mean to be holding out on the pillars, but, I could make a lot of money today as a speaker on how to lose 50 pounds in a month or how to make $1 million in a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of these floofy speakers out there on these kind of topics. The problem for me is trust isn't like that.
No.
Trust takes time.
Yeah,
it takes work.
That's true.
It's earned. Nobody trusts you just because you say, just trust me. You know, I mean, we've all had a sales guy like that, and that makes you want to throw up.
Yeah, it does.
You know, trust is earned by actions and words being congruent and some of these other things. So it takes work. However, it is the only way to genuine, lasting success in every case. You see athletes get to the top on talent, but lose everything because of a lack of trust and character or whatever it is. You know, one of the elements. I mean, look at Lawrence Taylor even right now again, and Michael Vick. And I mean, we could look at all these people that shot up on talent. They did not last because of a lack of something else. So, you know, it's maybe it's the long road, maybe it's a tough road, maybe people don't feel like they want it, but trust is a lot like a forest. You know, it takes a long time to build. In a flash of carelessness of a match, it can burn down.
It can burn it down, that's true.
But it's the only way to genuine success. Now, the good news is, if you work to really build that forest, and you do make a little mistake one time that you didn't mean to do, you, like Southwest, will be given grace.
Right.
Any other airline that would have had the issue they had a few years ago, where many lives could have been cost, would have tanked. But because Southwest was favored by their customers, by their employees, by the media, I mean, 32 years, something like that, they were number one in customer service and in all these things. They apologized, moved quickly to a solution, and everybody gave them lots of grace.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the outside idea too, is that yes, it takes a long time to build. Yes, it's built or lowered with every interaction, but it also has this other unique element that is, you know, that once you really build it and you do it the right way, then if something does happen that you didn't even mean, there's grace given and people overlook it often. But let's get to the eight pillars. How much? Where are we at time wise before a break?
Oh, we got about 2 minutes.
Okay, so
we can start them. If you don't finish them, we'll pick them up after the break.
Let's do that.
All
okay?
right.
So the first pillar is consistency. People trust the consistent. Brilliance, we say, is interesting, but it's not trusted.
Okay.
Only people that do the same thing over and over are trusted. So you might do a brilliant act, but I don't trust that unless I see something over and over. It's like, we don't even, you know, I make this comment. We might not even like McDonald's, right?
But we know it's consistent.
Yeah, absolutely, because they give us the same burger, and I've had it in Tokyo, in Germany, and in Cleveland. Might be different stuff inside, but it tastes the same.
Yeah.
You know, it looks the same, smells the same. It's the same, and that's the same with actors and actresses. People don't get paid. Many Oscars made it one, you know, they're one and done. But these people that can show themselves in three movies straight in different roles, all of a sudden they're paid $20 million. These people, Sandra Bullock, Clooney, Pitt, they were not high paid right away, but once they were consistent, then the producers said, you know what, people will go just to see them. They're so good that we can pay bucks for them. Consistency is king. We say in our office, it's the little things done consistently that make the big difference, not the big things. And so that's, you know, we can come back to that. I know maybe we'll get through a couple here. Second one is clarity. And in my speaking, I start with consistency. In the book, I end with it. But so pillar of clarity, basically, people trust the clear and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous.
Yeah, I believe
and
that.
And that's in every way. That's from a boss that's clear or one that's ambiguous. You know, we've worked for bosses that what they tell us everything we should have done at our annual review. Well, that didn't help much, you know. And we can talk about that on whether it's a clear vision, clear communications, clear expectations. And I've got lots of stories there if you want to come back.
Well, good. Stories are good, and we will when we come back after the break. You're listening to the Peter McClellan Show on Business 1570. We have with us today our guest, Dave Horsager, who is author of The Trust Edge. And it's kind of important. We're in a tough economic time. How important is that? Is the factor of trust? It's huge. When we come back, unfortunately, it'll be Angus for a little bit, but we'll get back to Dave, and we'll be talking further about trust. Good stuff. Stay tuned.
This is the Peter McClellan Show on Business 1570.
And now it's time for another nagging Scottish moment. Take it away, Peter, you nag. Hey, thanks, Angus. I tell you, I just wouldn't feel right if I wasn't being called a nag. Here's a nagging moment for you, laddie. It's a matter of trust. You know, what's the cost of not having trust? You know, today a lot of people no longer trust government. They no longer trust the banking system. They no longer trust Wall Street. The list goes on and on and on. These are challenging times. Well, Peter, I know things will work out eventually, but I personally don't blame people for not trusting congressmen, bankers, and Wall Street fat cats. they're all so corrupt. People are right to think these people are at the top no longer have their country in mind, the best for their country in mind, if you ask me. Well, I couldn't agree more with you, Angus. You know, I don't blame people at all. In fact, I honestly am one of those who no longer have a great deal of faith in what, you know, the motives of a lot of our so-called leaders. And so you started off starting with this thing of the cost of not having trust. What are those costs? Well, the cost is found, I believe, in part. There's a lot of costs. And that's something that we're talking with Dave about with his book. But the cost, one of the things I see is found in many times overreacting. And it brings on tremendous cost. Not just in reacting, but, you know, overreacting. For example, you know, many people no longer, and I think there's good things in this where people no longer trust quite as well because they get back to the basics. For example, people will no longer vote down party lines as much without really making sure that a candidate lines up with their way of thinking. I think that's a good thing. Bankers are lending people, you know, money, but a lot of people are saying, no thanks, I'm done borrowing, and that's a good thing. Why? Because less debt equals more freedom. And I'm not anti-banks. I'm just saying, you know, people are saying, no thanks, well, I'll pass. And investors, understandably, are more focused on potential risks associated with a given investment. And they're looking to employ investments that aim to mitigate decline. Well, Peter, that all sounds pretty reasonable to me. Yeah, it does, my kilted buddy. But for now, the emotions of the moment, which can understandably be intense, can cause people to overreact. And that's not good. Well, Peter, what exactly do you mean by overreacting? Well, Angus, did you ever play baseball? Not in Scotland. Well, here's an analogy. Just go along with it. You've heard of baseball. Come on, Peter. Of course I have. All right. Here's an analogy. In the investment world, I'll draw it to this. If you were at bat playing baseball and a pitcher threw a fiery fastball and it was coming straight for your head, what would you do? Well, Peter, I'm no stupid. I'd try and duck and get out of the way of that thing. From what I understand about baseball, some of these guys can throw a ball about 90 miles an hour. That could cause some damage. Very painful, I imagine, if it hits you in the head. No, I think you're right, Angus. And that would be a wise reaction, to duck, get out of the way of that pitch. So what exactly is your point, Peter? Well, I think getting out of the way is a great idea. However, when a batter not only ducks, but then throws the baseball bat at the pitcher, it's an overreaction that gets him into serious trouble. Well, how does that relate to the investment world? These are times when the markets don't make a lot of sense. They're volatile. It goes up and down erratically, up one day 400 points, down another day. And I'm convinced in times such as this, taking an attitude of just, oh, well, I'll just ride it out, is the equivalent of the batter who says, well, I'll just take it and, you know, get on base. I'll let him hit me in the face with a fastball. And then throws the bat at the pitcher, overreacts, because they're in pain. I really think, you know, granted, the analogy might be a little crazy, but you want to duck. And I believe in the investment world, it's imperative that people, you know, when you see a steamroller coming, when you see a fastball coming at your head, you need to get to the side. And granted, no one can predict what's going to be the best strategy in any given period of time, but it just makes sense to not say, oh, I'll just ride it out. Let the steamroller crush you, or let the fastball crack your skull. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, this market, it doesn't make sense. You know, the climb that we had on Monday, the 400-point climb, because the Greeks are getting a $1 trillion bailout, mark my words, this will not end well, because these people are broke. And when you're broke, you get desperate and stupid. And here's an idea. Let's give them more money to owe us. Let's put them further in debt. Makes no sense. So I don't want to be doom and gloom, but I want to encourage our listeners, you know, to at least consider alternatives. Consider that $1 billion, if you don't have the $1 billion trust fund like some people might, your portfolio matters. Give us a call at the 401k Latte Company. See if you might want to consider trusting us to help you, because you're going to trust something. You don't want to put it under the mattress. You don't want to overreact. Call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. It really is a matter of trust. When we come back, we're continuing to talk to Dave about the pillars. If you want to stay tuned, we're back after the break.
This is the Peter McClellan Show on Business 1570.
And welcome back to the Peter McClellan Show. This is your host, Peter McClellan. Thank you for listening. And if you're just joining us, we are privileged today to be speaking to Dave Forsager. And Dave has written a book called The Trust Edge, Transform Your Relationships, Revenue, and Results. Dave, back in the other segment before Angus, we were talking about two of your pillars of trust. And these are important for everybody at every level, no matter whether the business is small, large, you know, whether it's a college graduate just starting out or if it's somebody looking to make a midlife career change. We talked about consistency being king. We talked about, and you're starting to touch on clarity and how the lack of it when things are ambiguous. I can talk. You don't trust people that can't talk. There's just an element of lack of trust there. Follow up on that. You're just starting on clarity.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's so many parts of clarity we could talk about, and you know, we need to be clear in our vision. An old proverb says, without vision, people perish. And
true.
We see that in companies and families and lives all the time. Without vision, families fight. Without vision, you know, companies fold. Without vision, every organization flounders. But with vision, people come together. They get motivated. They get unified. And it's very important, clarity of vision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's also important to be clear about what you're going to be about every day. It's also important to be clear about expectations. I can remember with one of my staff, people like would ask them to do something, and I wouldn't get what I wanted. And finally, I said, I got very clear about exactly what I wanted, and I started to get what I wanted. So whose fault? Mine, you know?
Absolutely.
And being clear. You know, I think of maybe a great Minnesota company that's doing something unique this way. A lot of companies, including Enron, had great, lovely mission statements that nobody knew. Mm. So you can write a clear mission statement, but if people don't know it or it's not modeled, it really doesn't matter much.
Well, let me ask you this. We were just sitting down in a meeting yesterday in our business, a small business and financial planning firm, and there's a million things you can do. What, any suggestions on how does a leader clarify his thoughts? How does he himself get to the place where he can articulate with clarity and get rid of the ambiguity so the people mm-hmm. around him aren't confused or aren't, you know, kind of left in the lurch, so to speak?
Well, let's look at one example. Look at Caribou Coffee.
Okay.
They're growing. Starbucks isn't or hasn't been lately. And there's a reason for that. Now, Caribou Coffee, great Minnesota company, and there's lots of reasons they're great. But one of the reasons is because somehow, unlike a lot of other food service places, they train these 17-year-olds to give great customer service. How do they do it? One of the reasons and one of the ways is that they have a vision that everybody knows. You walk into any Caribou Coffee and ask them what BAMA means, B-A-M-A, and they all know it. I've done this for years. Say, hey, have a BAMA. Oh, that was BAMA. If they give me good customer service, I say, that was BAMA. And they say, oh, do you used to work here? They all know it. So it's great to have this big overarching mission statement like, you know, our company's mission is to share life-changing truth in a unique and impacting way. Well, that inspires. That means we're going to put everything under that. If it doesn't do that, like share life-changing truth in a unique and impacting way, we don't want to be about it. However, it's not as actionable. And so you want to also create, you know, this clear vision daily that is actionable. Two things. One, if as a leader or manager you're not sharing your vision every 30 days, nobody knows it. I don't care if it's on your emails, if you're not, you know, open meetings with it. If you're not sharing it every 30 days, nobody knows it. But secondly, if you can take that mission like Caribou did and make it actionable, then people start to live it out. So there's this old idea, you know, somebody went and asked these two bricklayers, well, what do you do? And one said, well, I lay bricks. And the other one says, well, I build cathedrals. And he lays every single little brick differently because he knows what he really is about. He's inspired to do it differently. He's challenged to do it differently. He's even called to do it differently. Now, let's translate that to Caribou Coffee. Caribou Coffee has something called BAMA. These, you know, like I said, young kids, they're not in this generation known for great customer service, yet you go to Caribou and they consistently deliver high customer service in comparison to other coffee houses and, you know, people in their domain who they would be compared against, which would be fast food and whatnot.
Now, is BAMA an acronym?
It's an acronym. The B stands for be excellent, not average. The A stands for act with urgency. So if you go time when, you know, from when you say your order to when you get your coffee, then go do it at a comparison place. Go do it, and I could name names. One of them would be, and not the big one that you're thinking of, would be probably 7 times to 5 times slower than how fast you get your caribou.
Really?
They act with urgency. The M stands for make a connection. And there are stories upon stories, and I don't get paid by them. I don't know, but I did interview, I did research caribou, and they have an ability. People make a connection, and people feel a connection there. And while Starbucks had the idea first of make it your third place, caribou has trained people to really create the atmosphere where they want to come there, where people do make a connection with each other, the baristas.
So these young people are encouraged to sort of facilitate conversation that connects
they
with people.
They ask questions. They say they're trained to really care about people in what they do. So they look out for needs. The fourth A, is anticipate needs. This is why if you go to a caribou and you always order the same thing, like I did for a while, a skim dark mocha, it would be there before I even went up to order it. The barista that's making coffees, making the drinks, saw me coming, knows it's Dave at the one I go to often, and has it ready before I even am there to order.
That's
now,
amazing.
If I say, oh, I wasn't actually feeling like that today. I was just going to get a coffee there. Oh, no problem. It's on us. The other thing is when I was writing my book, I just, in my office, I would do some, in the boardroom, I'd do some, but I needed to just get out of the office. It was much more creative. It was much better for me. I knew I wasn't going to get interrupted by phone calls and different things. And so I love to go to a caribou, and sometimes they even get one of their meeting rooms. They got so they knew whenever I come, whenever I have caffeine, I want to have a glass of ice water. And I never asked them. I would ask for water a couple times in a row. And then they got so before I would even sit down, if there wasn't a long line, this one lady would bring out water to me first. And then I'd get my, you know, get my coffee later. They had this mindset of anticipating needs. So what this did is it just simplified their vision in an actionable way. Now their big vision is greater and might be, oh, we want to do this big thing. But Bama made it so, well, how are we living that out? How are we going to train these 15-year-olds, 17-year-olds, you know, 20-year-olds? How are they going to really live out our mission so that we're doing what we really want to be about? Well, they came out, you know, be excellent, not average. Oh, I get that. What would my action look like if I was excellent, not average? What would it mean if I acted with urgency? What would it mean if I anticipated needs? What would it mean if I thought about making a connection? I thought about what are engaging questions that show that I care about the people that are coming through here. And they started acting different. And of course, you can also see now their stocks going up, their revenues going up, their influence is going up, and they're growing.
Okay. And again, it's Bama, not Obama. What's the O stand for?
No,
I'm joking. I'm taking you off track here. I'm
joking.
There
you go. Clarity is a huge one, and there's so many ways we can do that. I shared one little way with vision, but we need to be clear, and many people think they're clear, but they're not. And
no,
that
that's true.
Can be in an email, it can be in vision, it can be in lots of different ways. But it's something to consider. I have lots of tips and ways to do that in the book, to be clear. The next pillar is compassion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, once again, people could say, oh, that's just a soft idea, isn't it? No.
Wouldn't compassion be one that you either have genuinely or, I mean, if you don't have it and you sort of pretend?
Right. Insincerity kills trust.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. So what I did is I think people can develop it.
Okay.
I think people can. I mean, you take some people on, like I have taken people on third world trips to help build homes for people that don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
And something opens them up and changes their heart and mind to start thinking beyond themselves. And start to be more compassionate. Now, the truth is, you're right. In fact, a lot of these are very hard to train. I mean, character is coming up, and that's hard to train past 5 years old, too. But that doesn't mean it's still also true that of the companies, of the brands, and of the leaders that had the greatest legacies and were the most successful over time. They had all these things. So I'm not as much concerned of if I can train it or not. I'm concerned at what are the pillars that build the most trusted leaders, organizations, and brands of all time.
So in the organization, there's maybe an expectation, say, we will care about people.
Well, it is, and the truth is, you can, to a degree, institutionalize compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So, Starbucks, frankly, not to get off on the coffee bandwagon here, I didn't mean to, but Starbucks did this early and fast, and this is one of the things that helped them be so successful.
Mm-hmm.
People that only worked 20 hours a week got full health insurance. Well, no one did that.
Right.
But they did that, and they got great people that were artists and people that were, you know, they wanted to do something else with their lives too. They loved the coffee shop atmosphere, but they didn't want to, that wasn't all of who they were. Well, they got health insurance, and they were great employees, and they worked hard because, you know, Starbucks was compassionate to them, cared about them. They delivered, and they were able to do their other things too, and that was a sign of it. So you can, in a way, institutionalize it, or you can create a mission or policies that reflect compassion or ones that reflect selfishness.
Mm.
So I completely agree with you that it's hard to train compassion in someone.
Right.
However, it was a mark of the most trusted leaders and brands and organizations and the most successful ones.
That makes sense. If you're a leader, people are going to want to emulate you. That makes sense.
So we gotta. So it's up to people, and I give ideas in the book of how to cultivate that. But it's up to people if they really want to be great to figure out how they're going to, you know, grow in their compassion. There are ways to do it through experience and through being around people that are compassionate. But this ability to think beyond yourself is very important. We could learn a lot. You know, I talk about different folks that are more or less have more or less trust. And on this trust index that goes out every year, I think it's 20-some thousand people are interviewed or surveyed. And, you know, mortgage brokers has been towards the bottom. These different roles have been towards the firefighters, nurses have been toward the top. Well, the truth is you can find a trusted mortgage broker.
Yeah, that's true.
And wherever you find one, you find the most successful one. But in the compassion piece here, who's the most trusted of all? What role is the most trusted of all? Moms.
Really?
We could learn something from moms. Now, you can see on TV some jerky moms and people, you know, that, you know, whatever. But as a general rule, and I'm grateful that I had one, moms have this ability to sacrifice, stay up late, put salve in that ugly wound, help with the science project at midnight, and sacrifice and think beyond themselves. And if we could start to think beyond ourselves, as many companies have done, we'll also see that we become most trusted. And frankly, it'll change the whole climate of the organization and almost always the bottom line.
I believe it.
So, compassion.
Huge. If you don't have it, it kind of undermines everything else, I bet.
And what a terrible life, you know? What a terrible life. If you really don't care about anyone else, or have this inability to think beyond yourself, what a myopic, sorry life in a way, you know? Mm. So,
wow. These are excellent. I mean, I think it sounds like each one of your pillars could be a show. It really could. I mean, it could be an hour long deal on this, but
tell me how quick we got to whip through the
rest. We don't have much time yet. We're just about out of time in this segment. And again, for our listeners, you are listening to the Peter McClellan Show on Business 1570. We're talking with Dave Horsager about The Trust Edge. Excellent book. We're going through some of the pillars. We're probably not going to get to all of them, but all the more reason why you want to pick up a copy of his book. Dave, how can people get a copy of the book real quick?
TheTrustEdge.com. TheTrustEdge.com. We have had, it'll be out in bookstores and everywhere, but at the moment, the only place you can get it is TheTrustEdge.com or at our live events. Or at davehorsager.com, davehorsager.
Okay.
.com. Our office 651-340-6555.
Well, again, it might seem awfully common sense, simple, but great stuff. And I'd encourage you to pick up a copy of it. It sounds like a wonderful book. I've got to read it because just these are good things. Good things to be mindful of. How do you build a great organization? You got to have these pillars. You got to have trust. So we're back after the break. Stay tuned.
This is the Peter McClellan Show on Business 1570.
And welcome back to the Peter McClellan Show. This, once again, is your host, Peter McClellan. We're talking today with Dave Horsager, the book, The Trust Edge, and a very important book. It's just, you know, good. I mean, common sense is good. Common sense is missing, if you haven't noticed, in the marketplace. And this is something I think that's wonderful. Dave, you've hit on a number of things here. Maybe we're not going to get to all of them, but your next pillar of trust, so to speak, we've hit on consistency and clarity and compassion. What's next? Is it character?
Well, it is character. And, you know, people can say, oh, they've heard that before. And, you know, the truth is we can get to the top on talent. We only stay there because of character.
Oh, it's so
and
true.
And so the next, you know, I'll get two pillars in a row here. The next pillar after that is competency. Now, competency is important. In other words, being capable to do what I want you to do. So, Peter, you're such a great guy. I might trust you with my kids to watch them, but I wouldn't trust you to give me a root canal because you're not competent at that.
Right.
So you have to. I think it's worth people understanding and seeing that all these pillars are important. Character is foundational, and it's very important. However, it's not the only thing. You've got to stay competent in what you're at. You got to stay. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a high character sales guy, but he stops learning, and he stops staying fresh.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden his sales tank, because he was high character, but he didn't stay competent, or he didn't care about other people. You know, any of the pillars can pull you away. If you don't build all the eight pillars, it can certainly keep you from success. At least that's what we saw in the research.
No, it makes
sense.
So
character, competency, maybe a couple more at least.
Sure.
Would be
commitment.
Commitment, mm-hmm. Definitely. The ability, you know, I mean, this is where we saw, if you think of people even from history, this is another one, goes back to your idea around compassion, frankly, Peter. You cannot train commitment very well.
True.
You can't just say, in fact, I had a company right here in the cities recently say, tell our team, you know, we want to show them empowerment. We want you to, you know, empower them and help them to be committed to us. Well, they're not going to be committed to you unless you are committed to them, and all your systems and policies show you're not committed to them at all. So why would they be committed to you? So you know, commitment is critical, but we follow commitment. So a Martin Luther King or you know many others like that, we look at his commitment. Okay, now many would follow him because he was committed to do something the right way. He was committed to do it. You know, when you find real commitment, you'll follow a Gandhi or a Jesus or a, you know, and you can think of people in your own lives that have been committed to what's right, and they, you'll follow because they'll sacrifice. The common thing of committed people is a willingness to sacrifice.
Mm. And that's so important. And I'd throw that out to people today that are looking for work, because there's lots of them out there. Stay committed. Keep going. Keep fighting. Keep going forward. And be committed to your future, and don't give up. And I think it's one of the biggest battles. But Dave, unfortunately, we are out of time. And I want to say it's been a pleasure to have you here on the Peter McClellan Show today. One more time, how can we get a copy of The Trust Edge?
www.thetrustedge.com or davehorsager.com. Thetrustedge.com or davehorsager.com.
Okay.
Thanks so much for having me on, Peter.
Thank
it was really
you.
A treat.
It really has been, and I want to encourage anybody out there that's looking to grow a healthy organization or a healthy career, pick up a copy of this book. These are great principles to live by. So what would you say to that, Angus? Well, Peter, you know what I'd say? I'd say think on. All right, think on these things.
You've been listening to the Peter McClellan Show. Peter McClellan, CHFC, is the president of the 401k Latte Company. To reach Peter, call 952-882-0400 or on the web at 401klatte.com. This program is sponsored by the 401k Latte Company. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. For more information, go to www.401klatte.com or call 952-882-0400.